Hey everyone, it's Hannah.
It's Amy.
Today is Monday, January 21st.
And we are talking all about slate-colored Junkos or dark-eyed Junkos. Okay, so we're going to play the song.
It's really pretty. It's a really crisp trill.
And I think, like, it's a song that would easily blend in with the environment. You're not necessarily going to notice it.
Yeah.
If you know what to listen for, then you'll know what you're listening to, which I think is really cool. And then the warning call we have.
Looks like we have three options. Thank you.
Yeah.
What?
It's a little. It sounds like a bug, right?
Yeah, it does.
Like summertime.
Oh, you're right. It does sound like a little bug.
I thought that was adorable.
I'm going to play it again.
Okay.
Huh.
How cute.
It's like a...
I'm not sure I've ever heard the call, but I think I've heard the song. Birding by sound is really hard. I mean, it's like next level birding.
Oh, I'm a bad birder all around. I failed a depth perception test at my optometry office.
Oh, no.
So I'm useless in the field. Sorry, everyone.
Oh, no. Maybe if it's like big and bright and obvious, you know. Yeah, well, that's okay. We'll still bring you along for the fun.
I'm good company, I promise.
Yes, absolutely. The cool thing about these guys, too, is obviously we have slate-colored Junkos in this area.
Right.
In the eastern U.S. And my understanding is that there are three subspecies to slate-colored Junkos.
Oh, okay.
So there's even, like, more variation within them.
Okay.
However, researchers are stating that there are several subspecies of Junkos in general, and they're still trying to sort it all out. Because these guys, there are cases in which some of these subspecies have bred with others, so they're creating hybrids. And when it comes to taxonomy, it gets kind of tricky with how to define.
Right. And are these hybrids fertile themselves?
Yeah, to my understanding, they are. I haven't heard anything where they're just not. But
so we have a whole new taxonomy now that we may or may not have even discovered yet.
Yeah, and I say it like treading very lightly because it's such a complex topic, anything to do with like determining species and subspecies and subs of subs. Like it just gets very tricky. But apparently this is overall the Junkos are very complex and they're still trying to sort everyone out. So.
Huh.
And I always think that's cool. Like, you see a bird that's very common. It just kind of blends in with the rest of your environment. But then to learn, like, there's still a lot of research going on to learn about their species and their subspecies. And how they're interacting with one another is really interesting.
That's great. And this information is so important for us to learn because there are species of birds, you know, possibly in the U.S., but definitely in other countries that are on the verge of becoming extinct. So if we're learning about how they successfully breed – and are reintroduced into a population, that's just going to help us in other areas of conservation and outreach.
Yeah. They could definitely have similarities to birds that are more vulnerable. And if we can find out how Junkos thrive and possibly how that could help another species, that's wonderful. And this is where things like citizen science come into handy because people are able to report these findings.
You know?
And you might, I don't know, you might be someone that just likes taking photos of birds and you might take a photo of a hybrid or one that's not commonly seen, and you may have no idea until you post it on this database and someone a little bit more versed in the topic comes along.
Sure thing.
So it's kind of cool. Also fun tidbit, they're known as snowbirds.
Okay.
So super adorable. I wish I had some snow in my yard to see the snowbirds in the snow.
That would be so cute to see them in wintertime.
Yeah.
I mean, it is wintertime, but like it's kind of a drab winter.
I know. It's always kind of just sad when there's no snow on the ground. I don't know.
I don't handle the cold well unless there's snow.
Yeah. It's like, what are we doing
here?
Why
is it cold?
Exactly.
It doesn't need to
be. Exactly. good news. I should talk about their conservation as well.
Yes. It sounds like they're relatively stable if We have all these new species of them that we don't even right, know all the details about.
Yeah, exactly. They're considered least concern.
Okay.
They are protected by the Migratory Bird Treaty Act.
Great.
Because they're a native species, of course, so please don't keep them as pets. Please don't keep their eggs, their bones, their nest parts. Don't do it. They're wild. Leave them wild. Okay?
Yep.
Great.
Good job.
Yeah. However, I did see an interesting number that the American Breeding Bird Survey has noticed a steady decline between, I think it was like 1966 and 2015. They did the study on juncos.
Oh.
And there was a steady decline of like 1.4% every year. Overall, 50% decline.
Wow.
So
do we think that's happening because these are northern, more cold weather birds?
I'm not really sure. They didn't provide any information on why the numbers are declining.
Okay.
We also
don't know what the development is like in their native
that's
habitat.
True. Yeah, it could be like, you know, considering what's affecting their breeding grounds. You know, what's going on with reproductive success with these guys.
Mm-hmm.
We know that their habitat changes and they're much more flexible in the winter. But of course, if you have babies to raise, you're going to be a little bit more particular about what your habitat is.
Right.
So
and the food sources that you're able to provide.
Yes. So I haven't seen anything on that. I will continue to look and be happy to share, of course, if there are any studies out there on juncos.
Yeah.
But it doesn't sound like they're nearing the state of being vulnerable or threatened anytime soon. So that's a good thing to consider.
That's all we can ask for.
Yeah. So make sure you take a look outside or when you're on your winter walk.
Yep. Look down, not
look
up.
Look down. I'm sure you'll see them and just know that they're here every winter. And it's kind of a nice reminder that the cold season is upon us when they start to show up in the area.
Sure thing.
Yeah.
Thanks for sharing.
Sure. They're super cute. How could I not?
Yeah, they are cute. Their eyes are beautiful too.
They are.
If you have some binoculars, definitely try to get a good look at them.
Yes. So cute. All right. I think we're going to
head
on out.
You can find us on Facebook, Hello Cuckoo Podcast, and our Gmail, Hello Cuckoo Podcast. Our Twitter is, what's our handle?
At Cuckoo Podcast.
Yeah. Sometimes these are a little much for me to rattle through.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Just like, I'm sure if you Google us, it'll show up.
When in doubt. Cuckoo Google. Podcast.
Yeah, there you go. I was going to say Google it out, but okay.
Uncle Google. And we recorded on Anchor FM. Thanks for listening, everyone.
All right. Here we are. Another week.
Another new year.
We've switched over to a bi-weekly schedule with our podcast just to kind of better accommodate life, I guess.
Yeah, we love doing the weekly episodes. It's getting a little crazy with the new year. I think we both picked up some extra commitments and we want to be able to commit to them with as much effort as we can and pursue those with as much authenticity as I think we can get. So this is where we're at right now.
Yes, you say it perfectly. I totally agree. today we're talking about one of our winter residents, cute little juncos, the slate-colored juncos.
Yeah, our little visitors.
Yes. So these guys, you probably see them in your backyard or in your neighborhood park or adjacent field, wherever you may live, because they're very common throughout the winter. They start to show up in August.
I didn't realize it was that early.
Yeah, I think it might be a little bit more weather dependent, but basically when things start to cool off, you can see them as early as August, I should say. I personally don't tend to notice them till more around October.
Okay.
In my experience. And they can start leaving as early as February. I'm sure they linger a little bit, though, if need be. they don't breed here. So they just spend the winter here. This is their, quote, summer, I guess.
Yeah.
Their break from being moms and dads out there.
Sure thing.
they normally reside in Canada or even more northern U.S.
Okay.
Where it's a little bit cooler.
Yeah.
And these guys, you'll oftentimes notice them. They're a very dark gray bird. They're sparrow-sized.
Right.
So about the same size as a house sparrow. They have little, like, white outer.
Just little tuffets.
Yeah. It's on their tail.
Yeah.
It's on the outside of their tail. And you notice this when they fly off. So if they're flushed away from an area, it, like, flips out on the back end. I'm describing this terribly, I'm sure. But, yes, you'll see it. It's just little little flashes of white, and you know you have a junco pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I don't know. Do you see them in the city at all?
I haven't really paid too much attention, to be honest.
Okay. Well, I see them at home. So the cool thing I learned about these guys is that when it comes to their winter residence, their habitat needs and preferences kind of change. So when they're breeding, they prefer more forested areas.
Right.
A lot more vegetation. When it's wintertime and they're off the breeding schedule, they prefer more open habitat. So anything that's nice and open, like the prairie grassland.
Yeah.
Or, again, your backyard, your park that's nice and manicured.
Right.
They're a lot more adaptable in the winter.
So I think that's probably why I don't see them. Where I'm at in the city, I mean, it's a bunch of very narrow streets.
And yeah.
We have lots of trees lining our street, but it is a narrow street. And so there's no clear open space near us.
Yeah. I'd be curious to see if they're in like a preserve or a park that's like.
I know. I need to go over to Humboldt Park and check it out, but you got to be aware of when you're visiting.
You could check eBird. eBird is
That's true. Yeah.
It's a database offered by the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, and anybody that has the ability.
It's great for citizen scientists.
Yeah. Yeah. Citizen scientists. That's what you are. it's a really cool title. you can report a bird sighting anywhere, and it just kind of uploads to their database. And, you know, it could be part of a really important project or just good to know. It's used for everything from your common robin to your snowy owl. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
So maybe you need to check that to see.
I probably should.
If anyone's reported any juncos. Something cool I noticed too, or realized when I was learning about these guys, is that the females, they look similar, but they don't. They're a little bit more of a brown gray.
Yeah, they're just barely sexually dimorphic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I've seen some descriptions say like the males have like a dark gray or a black hood. Which, when I think of a hood, it's like a very clearly defined.
Like a neckline.
Yeah, I would think it's much more defined. But I'm going to say like it's more blended. Yes, you can see it's darker, but it's more blended. So,
but no, you're right. Those females are more of a drab color that helps them, especially when they are nesting in those vegetated areas. It helps them blend in with the nest and protect those babies a little more.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, we don't see them nest here, obviously, but they nest in the ground. Did you know this?
What?
I just assumed they were tree dwellers. They had babies high up in the limbs. No, they nest in the ground.
Okay, so that's so interesting that you mentioned this because our other wintertime visitors, the snowy owls, also nest on the ground.
Yeah.
So how ironic that both of our...
I don't know if it's coincidence or... I don't know. It might be a coincidence, but yeah, it's really weird that they both do it.
Well, they're both in like northern areas and that's...
Maybe where there's... I don't know.
I don't know Canada terrain that well.
I don't want to comment without knowing. But they just make these little like cup-shaped depressions into the ground.
Huh.
I guess they can have anywhere from 1 to 3 broods in a season.
Okay.
Typically 4 eggs. I've seen some numbers say 6 eggs in a clutch, so maybe 4 to 6 eggs.
I feel like that's really high.
Yeah, seems like a lot.
Especially with 3 broods in a season.
They are busy.
Woo.
They are busy. So yeah, it's kind of interesting. And the fledgling nestling stage is the same as it is with other songbirds. It's 2 weeks in the nest, roughly.
Mm-hmm.
2 weeks as a fledgling, roughly. And they get adult plumage around 2 to 3 months of age.
Yeah.
So, the cool thing about these guys too, we have to consider they're here in the wintertime.
Right. What are they going to eat?
They're heavy seed eaters.
Okay.
But they also eat insects. That was like...
Okay.
Insects is like 25% of their diet.
Their summer diet.
Yeah, exactly. We're not going to have much
that's another thing we could put it in with bird feeders. You could put mealworms in there.
You could. There's like dried mealworms. You don't even have to deal with live bugs.
You can freeze them too. Mm-hmm. It's a nice... I don't want to say nice way to kill them. But... They become inactive when you put them in the freezer. It's the same thing as what they're doing out in nature during the wintertime.
That's true. And they just happen to be eaten.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, you can do mealworms. I did that in my old apartment because I didn't have the ability to have bird feeders.
Okay.
So I had a balcony, and I would just lay out some mealworm along the edge of it, and birds would come pick it up and fly off.
Cool.
Yeah.
Maybe I need to do that.
Yeah. Pretty easy. Wasn't too messy.
From enrichment.
Yeah. There you go. So, yeah, these guys are going to be loving your spill off on your bird feeders, actually.
Yeah, I'm sure.
They're going to be all over it. Just like the morning doves would be. Mm-hmm. Just like maybe squirrels and other critters will be at nighttime. And what else?
So I know you mentioned that they'd be interested in more of the spill off of the feeder.
Yes.
And they nest on the ground. So are these birds more comfortable at like lower levels of our environment?
Yes. I'm glad you say that. I was getting there, but I needed you.
It's all right. Sometimes words are hard.
They're more – so when they travel on the ground, their mode of locomotion is to hop.
Oh, get out. That's so cute.
Super adorable, right? And they oftentimes have low levels of flight. So you'll see them fly very low across the ground. So, yeah, they're more ground-dwelling. Of course, they have full flying capability like any songbird does, but – oftentimes they're going to be right down there, ground level. So if you're looking for them, don't bother looking high up in the trees.
Yeah.
Look for them around bird feeders. Look for them around low vegetation. If you have any of those like really thick bushes like around your home, they're going to love those. It's good coverage for them.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So since they are kind of more exposed to certain predators, especially like us being in the suburbs or in the city, there's a lot of dogs and cats.
Sure. Yeah.
Do they typically like spend more time in a group social setting or are they more independent?
They're more social.
Okay.
So you'll see them in groups.
Safety in numbers.
Yes. And they do have some calls. So there's a song and a call, so to speak. So the song is just more like a trill. We could even play a sound bite of that for you.
Oh, you're not going to sing it for us?
No, because it's not going to sound good. but it's like 7 to 23 notes, something like that. It's just a light noted trill.
Okay.
And then they have a call, which I've seen resources refer to as a smack.
Like an alarm call?
Yeah.
Okay.
It doesn't sound anything like a smack. I thought that's what they meant, but it must be a...
Like a beak clap?
No, it's not even that. I don't know why they call it a smack. So if anybody has the answer, I need a birder's help on that one. But the smack is more of like a, I'm claiming this space, or it's a little bit more of a warning call to say, get out of here.
Okay.
So it'll cause other birds to flush from the area.
Okay.
Let's put us on pause. I'm going to get this sound bite pulled up for you guys because it's interesting to hear. And I want you to be able to recognize them if you're out in the yard or at the park. So one second.